Welcome to the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name is Kelly Rayburn. We're going to play you a little bit of a thing called The Balanced Living. Michael Ruben Cloggs is going to speak with Marvin Jones. So I will pass it over to Michael Ruben, to our special guests. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Balanced Living Show. We're here today with published author Maverin Jones, and she wrote the book Asthma Cured. And we're going to ask her some questions about asthma, and the book is also how she overcame it more or less spiritually, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll move forward with that. And, of course, we brought back as co-host, we brought back Diane Hume, NLP coach, and go ahead.
Yep, neuro-linguistic programming coach, and yes.
Yes.
Okay. You remember me from last time?
Yes.
Yes. I'm very, very excited to be here co-hosting today and getting to know more about Maverin and her book, and I'm so super excited about this.
Okay.
It's great to be here.
So I guess the big question is, because we know that asthma is supposed to be a lifelong thing.
That's correct.
With breathing hang-ups and things like that. So can asthma be cured?
I truly believe it can be. Medically, they will tell you no. And so I don't want to argue with the medical association about that, but I do think there's a lot more to asthma than just taking the different medical medicines that you have to take. They all have a lot of side effects and cause other problems in the body, and I would like to see natural health coming in as well, because I truly believe if you put the two together, if you had the medical and the natural ways of getting health to come back to its correct level, that you would get the answers just like that. I don't think they're just one or the other by themselves can do it, but I think if you put two together, I think we would have the perfect situation for curing a lot of illnesses, not just asthma.
Yeah. So right now, what is the standard? How do they treat asthma now? It's just a puffer with a steroid, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's puffers and steroids, and you're taking them all the time. Like, some people have to take them four times a day, and that's a lot on the system. So I think if there was ways that they looked at it, I do feel that there's more to it than just the medicine. I think you need to go inside to find some of the answers to the asthma. I don't think the physical is actually the last sign. If you go into alternative health where they look at the whole body, which is holistically, then you need to look at everything, not just the physical. Because holistic believes that the actual physical result that you get is the last sign, and it's been going on in the body for a long time. So you've got the spiritual, you've got the mental, and you've got the emotional, and then you have the physical. And usually the physical is all that's addressed, and in the medical situation, maybe a little bit, there are some people in the medical association, they're starting to look at the emotional, but this is something that's never really been addressed, is emotion, and in regards to asthma or to most illnesses. And so I truly believe that if you start looking at the body as a whole instead of it as just being a physical being, that you'll start to get some answers. And that's the way I went with the asthma.
Okay. I agree that we do need to look at the whole body, and Is there one particular area that is more important, though? Should we be looking more at the emotional, spiritual versus the mental, physical?
The body is, there's the four parts. You've got the spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical. Those four bodies should be balanced. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that you can do is look at the body and see which ones are balanced and which ones aren't. In my case, the mental body was extremely strong. I just thought everything through to the nth. I was very, very mental, and I was very, very physical. I've always been physically fit all my life. And so those two were very, very strong. The spiritual was there because I did belong to a church growing up, but it wasn't really, really strong per se. It was on a much lower level, and the emotion was hardly there at all. When I looked at it, there was hardly any on the emotional. It was so shut down, and which is, what happens with a lot of people. A lot of things that happen to you through your life, you don't deal with them. You just shut it down because it hurts. And so when you start looking at looking for a cure, that's one of the things I looked at was, first off, was the four bodies. And once I saw that those two were very out of balance, then you have to go into those areas and start looking at, okay, what do I do to change that? How can I change it? Mm-hmm. And that's how you get it started.
So in your case, how did you actually start going down the path?
I'd known from the time I was a child that there was a cure. I've always known that. But life interferes. You're a kid, you grow up, you don't sort of think about it too much, right? So when I was a teenager, I think I took up yoga. It wasn't anything to do with asthma. I just took it up because I had two jobs and I was trying to juggle, and somebody said yoga is very good, gives you a lot of energy. But once I got into it, the spiritual aspect is what really appealed to me rather more so than the physical. I still thought about it a lot, but because it sort of went away for a while, you kind of forget about it. And then when it came back, I'd moved over here. My father-in-law gave me a book, and it was The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, and that was when I started thinking, okay, there's got to be something to this. And so that's when I started really looking into it, and then I realized, okay, there's the mental. So the first thing that has to happen is you have to change your mind about the way you think, because until you change your mind, nothing will change. And so that was how I got it started, was, okay, I need to change the way I think, which means you need to open your mind. You have to look at all aspects of everything. You can't just pick and choose bits and pieces that you want. You have to look at all the things out there. And that's what I did. First thing I did was open my mind, and okay, I don't care what it is, I've got to look at it all. Even if I don't agree with it, I need to look at it so I can see if I can make some changes. So that's where I started, was with the mental.
Yeah. Mm. And this is a continuous journey now for you to continue on with the whole mind-body connection.
Yes, yeah, it's been, since I started it, yeah, it's been that all the way through. And as you know, you're always working on yourself. It's a lifelong thing. We're continually a work in progress. So, yeah, I mean, once I started with the mind, then I started looking into all sorts of different things. You know, it opens up your mind to, like I read Louise Hay's book, and that was one of the first things I did. In her book, she had something about asthmatics and they don't want to be here. And I just, right away, I just thought, no, she's wrong. That's not true at all. I've always wanted to be here. I've always wanted to be alive. But the more you think about it, because again, you open that mind, so after a while I realized that, yeah, there was a part of me that didn't want to be here. But it takes you a while to get to it, because we are conditioned to think in certain ways. mm-hmm. right? From the time we're very young, there's conditioning. Yeah, so you've really got to open up your mind. Yeah.
Well, some of that conditioning we're taught to close our mind off from things instead of keeping our minds open.
That's right. Yeah, that's what makes the difference. Is you do have to find that a lot of the teachings you've had when you've been growing up, they don't work so much when you are trying to work with an illness. So you do have to learn to let a lot of those go. Yeah, that they're not really your thoughts. They've just come from somebody else. It's their conditioning. Yeah.
Navreen, I'm really, really inspired and excited about what you're saying. I love the whole mind-body connection. It's just a miracle that you found this to cure yourself.
Yes, it is. I mean, if I hadn't found Louise Hay's book, I think, you know, once I had The Power of the Subconscious Mind, that was the start of it, and then Louise Hay was definitely the next one. And so, yeah, I really went after it after that, looking for it, and tried. In her book, of course, you know, she talked about different things that you can try, and so I did. I tried a lot of different modalities. The one I had the most success with was regression hypnotism, and that's when I started getting answers. I had gone with a first session I had, and the practitioner took me back, and then he just took me back like way past I was, you know, born, and I had no idea where he was going with that. And then he stopped, and then he just told me to come forward, and so I went through the experience of being strangled. And it's not the nicest thing in the world for somebody to be strangled. And I described it to him perfectly, and I had no idea. I don't know what you go through when you're being strangled, but I do now because I experienced it. So that was the first restriction to do with the breathing. And the regression gentleman felt that there was three connections. You had three instances that would happen to restrict the breathing, and then it would be locked in. And after that, it would just be an automatic reaction. When you got a trigger, you would have an asthma attack. So that was the first one he found. And then the second one, he took me back to just before, 6 days before I was born. Prior to that, probably he took me back about 2 weeks, I think, something like that. And he kept coming forward 14 days, 12, 13, like going down like that. And then he got to the sixth day, and when he did, my whole face just went totally red, and I couldn't breathe. I was just clawing at my neck. I had no idea what was going on, and it was quite terrifying, actually. And he brought me out of it quite quickly, and we talked about it, and what it was is that the cord was around my neck, and so I couldn't breathe. I was just struggling to breathe, and this was 6 days before I was born. Now, I knew some things about my birth, but I had no idea that there was a cord around my neck. I don't think anybody knew that. So, that was very interesting. So then we went looking for the third incident that happened, and so he said after that third one, it would have been locked in. So my parents had told me I was 5 when I had my first attack. So he took me back right through the 5th year, and we went through everything, and we could not find any reason that would have set it off. It was quite a nice year, actually. There was lots of nice things came up. So I wrote to my father, my mother was already passed away, asked him if it was definitely that year, because we couldn't find anything. He wrote back and said, oh yes, definitely, you were 5 years old. And so anyway, we had to let it go because we couldn't find what that third trigger was. And so we let it go. I did have results from that. Prior to that, I'd been allergic to a lot of animals. And after that, we were able to have a cat. And I'd never been able to have a cat all my life. So, and my son had a guinea pig, you know, again, fur. And I was fine with it. So from the regression, I started having partial success. So that was key for me to keep moving. So I tried lots of things after that. I went to chiropractors. I didn't do it because I had a neighbour that had asthma cured through going to a chiropractor. So I tried that, tried a naturopath, and didn't get any more from there. So there were all sorts of different things I tried. And then the asthma came back quite strong, and so that's when I had to start looking, you know, a little deeper than what I'd been doing, because there was something obviously going on.
Yeah. So how long has it been now since you've had your last
Asthma attack I had was 1990, and that's the one where I almost died. Yeah, I had an out-of-body experience, and I was in a coma for 4 days. And I haven't had asthma since that time. But that's because after I came out of it, I really went looking for something to give me the final answers, because I was never going to have another asthma attack as long as I lived, and I was determined about that.
So the past life experience that you had, that... how did that relate exactly?
Well, it was the breathing restriction, because the regression therapist believes that with asthma there is three things that restrict the breathing, and after that it's locked in and it's triggered. The asthma's triggered all the time by emotion or whatever things can trigger it, you know, if it's something like fur or dust or all those sort of things, right? So that's why he looked for the three. And if we'd found the third one, perhaps I would not have ended up in hospital, I don't know. But he only found two. We couldn't find the other one, couldn't find the third one.
So you never figured out what the third one was at all?
Oh yes, I found out what the third one was. It was after I almost died, and I went home to see my father. And in Australia, and he told me you were actually three when you had your first asthma attack, not five. And that attack happened because my brother was born, and that's what set it off. Now that my brother was born, because you'd have to go back a bit. When I was born, my dad did not want a girl; he wanted a boy. And so I knew that. I knew that when I came in, that he wanted a boy. He didn't want me. So there was a thing right there. I wasn't wanted. So that was set up right from the very beginning. So the reason they told me five is because they thought if they told me I was three, that it would always affect the relationship I had with my brother. And they didn't want that. They wanted us to get along. So they told me I was five, and I didn't know the difference. So I always thought I was five, but I was actually three. Yeah, yeah. So.
So it was just that he was born, and that your father's attitude changed towards you? And
no, my dad thought that I was the apple of his eye. Like my mum, well, I didn't know until I was about 19 that my mum told me that your dad always wanted a boy, and she said, I always knew that you knew. She said, from the time I brought you home from the hospital, your eyes followed him. The first word you said was dad. You crawled, you went after him. You walked, you went after him. You did everything. He was out in the garden, I was out in the garden. So I became that boy that he wanted. I climbed trees, I climbed gates, I did all the things that boys did. So on some level I knew that he wanted a boy, and I was going to be that boy for him. But then when my brother was born, I think that's why the attack happened, because it was like, no, here's the boy, what's going to happen to me now? They're not going to want me, they've got him. So there was the asthma, bang, because it already had the two instances, and this was the third one. Yeah.
So coming to that realization that, oh yes, it's the past feelings and all of that, how has that helped any reoccurrence of the
Well, asthma? After I came out of the hospital, I knew I had to find out the root cause of the asthma, right? And so somebody told me about a technique called rebirthing, or conscious breathing. And so I found a person that did rebirthing, and I went and had 10 sessions with her. A lot of stuff came up, but not anything to do around my birth. But once you learn to do it, you can do it yourself. So I was doing it every other day, and I did it for about 3 months before I actually got the answer, before I did a session where it all came up. And it literally, you're just breathing, that's all you're doing, and it just brings all the emotion up. And that's exactly what happened. The emotion just came roaring up through the body. I've got it in the book in more detail, but it comes up through the body, and it just comes out, and the emotion is very, very intense. And it was that I did not want to be here. I was not wanted. There was nothing about this place I wanted. I just didn't want to be here. It's as simple as that. And I had breathing problems right there when I was born. They couldn't get me to breathe. So that was the root cause. Didn't want to be here. Yeah. Mm. So.
And so now the breath is able to come up easy and effortless.
I don't have any problems. Yeah, I've had I could do lots of sessions of rebirthing. I still do it. There was still a lot of things to come up. There's a lot of emotion. It's amazing how much emotion we have inside of ourselves that hasn't been dealt with.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to get back to what that emotion was when we get back from this break.
You're tuned in to the Community Living Show. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn on the controls. We're talking about Marvin Jones as the special guest talking with Michael Rubin. We will be back with more on the conversation in just a moment. This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks, the NCRA radio stations. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
I think the news midweek, when the midweek news broke that Teo Dezar wasn't going to be playing in this game.
Growing sport, and to do it on a university campus with an educational message behind it.
They'll be facing off against all the big teams from all the other conferences and the nationals.
Want to be a CITR sports broadcaster? Looking for a cool way to get involved in UBC sports? Then email sports101@citr.ca or come by our station in the Nest to find out more. See you soon.
This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name is Kelly Rayburn on the controls, and we're doing a special show on the Balanced Living, hosted by Michael Rubin and Michael Rubin Cloggs and Diane Humey, and they're talking with Marvin Jones. Let's get back with the interview.
And welcome back. And we ended with, you were talking about an emotion that came up, and what was the emotion? What was going on there?
The emotion that came up, it was sadness, and it was just incredibly sad. I mean, as an adult going through this, I felt sorry for the baby that I was, because I just thought that poor baby coming into the world and having such an incredible level of sadness at the beginning of the life. And because you do pick up things, people say that no, babies don't know anything, they don't feel anything, da 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 da. That's not true. You do feel things, and there's a lot of sadness depending on what happens. Yeah, and probably a lot of happiness too for a lot of babies, depending on what their path is. So it is very, very selective for whatever person goes through.
So with the asthma attacks, how frequent were you having them?
When the asthma started as a child, they were just very short attacks. And my In those days there wasn't a lot of medication, so my mum used to use what they call mustard plasters, and she'd put all this gooey stuff on paper, and they put it on your chest and they put it on your back, and then they put a shirt or something over it, and you go for a nap. And when you got up, the attack was gone. So that's how it started. Then when I was 8 years old, a second lot of attacks happened, and that was because the gentleman, one of our neighbours, he was like my grandfather, surrogate grandfather, and I adored him, and he died suddenly. And I went into a major asthma attack the day of his funeral and couldn't actually go. And after that, my attacks went for a week. I had two kinds of attacks then. Then I'd have the one where I did come on any time, and I'd have to take a pill and sit quietly, because in those days it was a very different way of addressing asthma. So I'd have to sit for a few hours and it would go away. And then I had a week-long attack. And that attack is, I woke up with it on Monday morning. There was absolutely nothing that would stop it. And it would just climb during the week until Fridays. And Fridays was the worst day. I used to think I was going to die because I couldn't breathe. And then on Saturday afternoon, it would start to subside, and then I'd come back to normal. Now, those week-long attacks went on from the time I was 8 until I was about 15. And I'd have it, sometimes I'd have a month in between where I wouldn't have them, but sometimes I'd have it for a week, and then I'd get a week's rest, and it would be back again for another week. And very, very intense, nothing you could do to stop it. No pills would stop it. They had injections in those days, but I was only allowed to have them rarely because you'll get used to them. So it was like, suffer through it. I mean, when I look back now, it was pretty barbaric, because you were struggling, literally struggling to breathe. It must have been terrible for my parents to watch. When they diagnosed me with asthma, the doctor had told my parents I was only doing it to get attention. So if you don't give her any attention, then she won't do it anymore. So they listened to what the doctors said. And so I was made to go to school. I had to do my chores. Nothing changed when I had an asthma attack. Life went on exactly the same. So very, very hard. Quite a struggle, actually, to get through a lot of those weeks. Now, the two things happened when the week-long one stopped. Was one, I started working outside the house, and so that changed the dynamic. And the other thing is, they brought in a puffer, and so the two things together actually really helped with the asthma. And from then on, I never had the week-long attacks. They stopped. And I did discover what they were, at least I think this is what they were, and I there's no way I can prove it. But when I was, my mother was carrying me, I was transverse in the womb, which is sideways like this. And so the week before I was born, my mother was taken into the hospital. I was straightened, which is, I'm thinking this is probably the 6 days before I was born, if we go back to when I did the regression. And she was straightened and she was bound so that I could not move, so that I had to stay like that for 6 days until I was born. So here you've got the attacks go for 6 days, right? And Friday would have been the worst. She may have already gone into labour by then, so it must have been agonising, absolutely agonising. And I was born at 5 to 12 on Saturday in time for lunch, and the attacks would start abating after lunch on Saturdays, every Saturday, when I had those week-long attacks. Now, when I did the rebirthing, and after my first big one where I, you know, the sadness and everything else, I did several other sessions, and I was a forceps birth as well. So, and they tell you babies can't feel anything. But when I did the rebirthing session, I had a session where I was breathing, and then suddenly I had this intense pain at the back of my head. And it was like somebody was digging a knife into the back of my head. And it just kept digging and digging and digging and you breathe through it with rebirthing, so that you do let that emotion go. That I feel was one of the things that caused trauma as well, was them trying to pull me out with the pain of that on your head. The other thing that I felt was really hard on the baby was that when you are pulled out like that, there's no way of preparing for being born. You're actually yanked out, so that causes a lot of trauma to the baby to be yanked like that. There's no natural progression for them. They're just absolutely pulled all the way out. So I know it sounds pretty, but anyway, that's the figuring out that I've actually got to, is why I had the week-long attacks. It was all tied in with the birth. One of the other rebirthing sessions I had was also that I couldn't breathe, and I was breathing into it knowing that I did live, so whatever this is, it's going to come up. And I actually saw the cord, it came from here, and it just, at the last minute when I couldn't breathe, it just went up like that. And then I was pulled out. So the cord was around my neck, but somehow it got off, and I have no idea. But that's from the rebirthing. You see it all in your mind's eye. So I know this is all very far-fetched for a lot of people to believe.
Maybe, but there's got to be, it sounds like there's some line of truth to it. The hypnotism brought some of it up, and then the rebirthing is confirming it. So,
yes.
So how did you deal with, that's a lot of trauma.
Just through the rebirthing, like with the when I did the regression, the gentleman that I did it with, he was very good in afterwards you dealt with any emotion or whatever that came up from it, right? Because you did have emotional, and in the days afterwards, if you had any emotional repercussions from that, you could call him and talk to him about it, which, you know, you were able to do. And then from the rebirthing, it is through all the breathing, you do actually release the actual rebirthing. That's what it is. It's an hour and a bit cycle, can be longer, and it brings it up to the surface. You breathe through it, you change the level of the breathing to a panting until you work through it, and then it subsides and you come to a feeling of peace. And you know you've released it. But I mean, I've been through my birth about four times in my rebirthing sessions, you know, spaced apart, you know, and in different aspects of it coming up. Like I had an aspect where I was cold, I felt I was off to the side, it was like, nobody wants me, why doesn't anybody want me, what's wrong with me? But what was happening, and I was in my head, I was calling to my mother because I'd been attached to her for 9 months and I was getting no response, but she was on the table hemorrhaging. I'd just been born and they were struggling to save her life, which I didn't know, so they'd got me to breathe, so it was like, put her to the side, now deal with this. So the baby has reactions even though they say they don't.
What was your biggest aha moment when suddenly after your sessions you realized that, oh my gosh?
The biggest aha one was probably when the first rebirthing I did that brought it, it was just like a dandelion root. That's what it felt like. And it just came right from the sacrum part of the body and it just roared right up the body. Just felt like it was ripped out completely. And that was my aha moment. That was it. Yes, I did not want to be here. And that was the biggest aha moment I had. And then I thought, yes, I've found it. That's what I've been looking for.
So it was from your birth that you, all the trauma around it,
yes.
your mom having trouble, the forceps, the transversing, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it all goes back to my birth, which, you know, I think, you know, maybe there's a lot of babies have a lot of problems when they're born and nobody thinks about it because they think all babies are kind of little blobs and they don't feel anything, or, you know, they can't, right? So, but anyway. There is a doctor, Fred LaBoyer, that's gone into it and found out that, yes, babies, there's a lot more to it than people realize.
Diane, you want to lead off with a question, right?
Yes. What I wanted to know is the importance, now that you know what you know, the importance of knowing this for anyone else who is experiencing this trauma of asthma. Why would it be important for them to know about knowing about their past?
Well, I think that's why I have written the book, is it's a testament to my journey to say to try and get people to look at the asthma, and I mean, it could be used for any illness, it doesn't necessarily have to be for asthma, but it gives them somewhere to start. Like, people say, oh, I'm asthmatic, some people say, oh, well, you know, I have to be asthmatic, my mother had it, or my grandmother had it, or whatever, and my grandmother had it, so that was one of the things I went back through the family history. A lot of them had passed away, so it was very difficult. But the book, that's why it is important for them to know this, because they don't know where to start, they don't know what to do, how would it affect me, you know, my family's different, whatever, whatever. So you start in the book and you read it and it's like, okay, well, maybe I could look into that, or this is how it's done. So I just, that's why I think it's important, because people don't know that they can do anything. They're sort of told that, you know, they can't, and you have to live with it. That's, you know, what they're told, that no, there is no cure, you have to live with it. That's what my mother was told. And I was in the room in the doctor's office when he said it, and I just, in my head I was screaming at her, tell him that's not right. It is, you can't cure it. And I just sat there looking at my mother, and she never said a word. And I was just like, yeah, it can be cured. So, but of course, you know, and then I forgot about it. You know, as a kid, you just forget about it and whatever. So, yeah.
Yes, in my hypnotherapy training, I learned a lot about it being deep into the cellular, cellular levels, and deep in with our thoughts. Do you then recommend that people who have asthma, that they go in and get into the deeper cellular level and do some hypnotherapy?
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that I addressed. That's why I went for the regression therapy, because he'd had 80% success rate with asthmatics. And so that's how I happened to go to him, because yes, I knew it was in the cells, it was inside, and I wasn't going to find the answers out there, it was inside. So I always knew I had to go inside to find it. And so yes, it's in your cells, and as I say, from things that happen, it was there from the time I was born, right? Mm-hmm. So you often think, I mean, my brother and I have never been close, and I often wonder, how did he feel? He's this little baby laying there, he's just come into the house, and I'm screaming like a banshee at this little baby, saying, I don't want him, I don't want him, send him back, I hate him. And yeah, my dad said, I was berserk, the way it was going off at my brother. So you often wonder, well, what that little baby was laying there, what was he absorbing while I was doing that? So yeah, that's in his cellular memory.
Yeah. Well, we center our first memory. If somebody asks about their first memory, it's usually the first memory that they could speak.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that the brain, as a hard drive, hasn't absorbed everything else that hasn't happened up to that point, right?
Yes.
So how do we get it to come out of us so that we can actually deal with these things?
Well, I mean, there's all number of modalities out there that you can, you know, try, and not the same thing won't work for everybody. You know, some people go with hypnotherapy, others go with Reiki, some go with chiropractors works. I mean, I've got a whole chapter in there of all the different things you can try, and I haven't got all of them in there. There's so many out there. But I always say to people, if you want to find a cure, all you have to do is have the intent and just put that out into the universe. You have the intent, I want the answers, and the doors will start opening. and you will be led to whichever way you want to go. People will tell you things, you'll hear about a talk to go to, there'll be something on TV, somebody will give you a book to read. There's all sorts of ways it can happen. And because some of us hear better, that's the way we need to have things happen. So they'll see things on TV or they'll go to talks. Others, it's books. For me, it was books. Books would come at me like you wouldn't believe because I just devour books. So that was how my learning was. A lot of it was through books. Other people, they have to watch things. It's the, you know, seeing. They need to watch things. And other, so it's whatever your strong point is in your body is where the information is going to be geared towards. And, yeah, you can work on anything you want because I think most children have things there. I mean, children can't reason until they're 7 years of age. So prior to that, they just think and feel. And they're not at all like adults in that respect. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking and feeling, so the parents are saying all sorts of things to them. They could be joking. The child takes that in as gospel to them sort of thing because they don't have the powers of reasoning. They can't reason, oh, mum and dad's just joking. To them it's like, oh, and it sinks in. It's gone in. So there's a lot of things like that for, I think, there's, you know, when you're looking at an illness, there's a lot in people's childhoods, a lot that has to be looked at, probably for everybody. And I mean, this is not to knock the parents. I'm not knocking parents. Parents do a wonderful job. All parents do. You do the best you can with the knowledge you have at the time, right? But they're coming from, when I look back to see my parents and see where they had come from, they did an amazing job with my brother and I, amazing. Because they were dealing with dysfunctions themselves. So, you know, I'm very blessed that I turned out as well as I did, considering. So this is, you know, you sort of have to take that into consideration too.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, are you trained in any modalities that can help people in the asthma area?
No, I'm a Reiki master. I do Reiki sessions. But no, I don't. I have done talks on asthma, and I will go and give talks on it, but I don't actually work with people doing it. I do tell people, try rebirthing. It's something, there was a lot of practitioners around at the time I was looking for one. I don't know if there's a lot around anymore. There could be, I've not researched it to find out, but I don't actually work with asthmatics per se, no.
Are there any other diseases, disorders that taking a lot of the steps that you described would actually help them find an answer?
It may. Yeah, it may. I mean, you're dealing with the emotions, and that's a big segment of any illness, and it's not something that's addressed by anybody. I mean, they'll send you to psychologists and psychiatrists for the mind, and you've got the doctors for the physical. You know, and you've got priests and ministers and whatever for your spiritual if you need it. But there's nobody that really addresses the emotions. And, you know, how often have you heard in your life, oh, get over it? Well, you can get over it, but you don't really deal with it. And it goes in and it just sits there in the body, you know.
Well, is it that we're going to say the scientific community says that the mental is the emotional also. I think that there's a separation between the
two.
Yes,
I do too.
But is that what our society is thinking?
Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't want to second guess, you know, doctors really, because I'm just saying this is from my experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that they are separate. Your mind is one thing. You change your mind, you change how you think, you open your mind up, you're open to all sorts of possibilities. But the emotions are something different. You know that. You go to a movie, you feel the emotion. If it's a sad movie, you feel sad. And that's the emotions. There's nobody that actually looks at that. They just look at the mind and changing the mind and changing the way you think. There's a lot of things out there about that.
Yeah. Mm. So
I'm just curious about the Reiki again.
Mm-hmm.
could that help? Could it clear anything that...
Quite possibly, yes. If the person has the intent that they want help, yes, when you're doing the Reiki, you're channeling energy so it can have reactions in the body. I work with people, they do get reactions in the body. You get tears, you get laughter, you get all sorts of things going on in the body. So yes, you could get results that way.
Mm. So after the break, let's come back and talk about energy versus illness.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And let's go to a break.
This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name is Kelly Rayburn. We will be back in a moment with more on Marvin Jones in just a moment. The Community Living Show is stories for the people with disabilities, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and many other issues, along with accessibility issues. If you want to participate and are a member of any of the NCRA radio stations, including this station that you're listening to in the area, or if you have any story idea and want to become involved in the technician personnel, please email us. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. No experience necessary. People with disability or non-disability are welcome to the show.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you and I rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rose, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, all right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
Welcome back to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name is Kelly Rayburn on the controls. We're talking about the balanced living with Diane Hume and Michael Ribbon-Cloggs. So we're going to go back to the interview with Marvin Jones and the final segment of the show.
So Marvin, I see you've got a book here. And it has all the details of your journey, and it seems that your main goal for this book, mostly about the getting them off medication and knowing that there's another way. What led you to the actual? That's it. I'm doing this. I'm writing this book. the real trigger.
Well, when I came out of the coma, I wrote the first chapter, which is about the coma, and I just sat down and I wrote it, and I've never changed it from the day I wrote it. And then I didn't do anything with it, and I kept saying, you know, I'm going to write a book on this, I'm going to write a book, and it just never happened. The time wasn't right or whatever. And then last year, a friend asked me to go to a talk with her. She wanted to listen to this lady talk, and so I said, oh, okay, I'll go along. Didn't know what it was about, and ended up getting, it was a lady that was in a publishing company, and she was looking, I ended up getting a half-hour interview with her on the phone, and so she said, oh, I love the concept. She said, and this was the end of January, and she said, can you have it written by the end of May? And the end of April, February, March, April, February. March, April, yeah. So 3 months I had to have it written. And I had the first chapter, of course, was done. I had two more chapters, but they were only bits and pieces. So from then until April 25th, which was the day it went in, I just ate, drank, slept, the book. And that's, I worked for, you know, wrote for 3 hours every morning, 3 hours every afternoon. Couldn't write at night because then I wouldn't be able to sleep because the mind was going too much. So I had it done in that 3 months and it went in and it never had to be edited or anything. It we just went the way it was. So it was, yeah, it was divinely orchestrated, I'm sure of it. Yeah, because it was just so easy the way it all flowed. And when I'd get to a chapter and think, okay, now what am I going to write about? I'd be at the gym the morning and I'd be on the treadmill and it's like, bang, there was the thing for the next chapter. Oh, okay, go home and start that chapter. And then finally, nothing came. So I was like, oh, you're done now. It's finished. And my whole idea of writing it is to get people to look outside of the medical. I don't advise anyone to stop taking their medicines. That is crazy. You can't do that. But as I say in the book, is to go to your doctors, get your doctor to work with you. And because anytime you want to go on a journey, you should have people that are agreeable with you to go on that journey. And most doctors want you to be healed, so talk to the doctor and say, this is what I want to, I'm going to try some of these things, and yeah, they'll go along with you, hopefully, and this is what I want for people. Even if one person gets some success out of this, then I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did have a question about energy versus illness. Mm-hmm. So if we put the right energies into our lives, will the illness become more, I won't say it will go away, but it'll become easier to handle, that sort of thing?
The energy is very important. You always need to have a high level of energy. But the problem is that once you do get ill, the energy becomes lower because you take more and more energy to deal with the illness, mm-hmm. right? But if you, for a lot of these modalities, that the healing modalities, they are working with energy, so they're going to get in there. And when you have an illness, there's parts of the body are blocked because there's energy blockages, they call them. And so to work with the illness, you need to release those energy blocks. And so Reiki and all of the different things I've got in here, they all work with that, just as hypnotherapy does. It releases the energy blocks. And yes, it can relieve the illness. In a lot of cases, it takes the illness away. You've dealt with it, and so it doesn't need to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So, yeah,
so you can take it away or simply make it so that it's just...
Yeah, it just lessens it.
Less of a burden.
Yeah, it's just whatever the person wants. Some people, and it's unfortunate, but a lot of times when a person's ill, if they've been ill for a long time, when it starts to go away, it's almost like they panic because they don't know what their life would be without it. So on some level, they pull it back again because they're more comfortable with it than they are without it. And that you often see that with people, that they will literally bring it back because they're more comfortable living, dealing with it because they don't know how to deal with a life without it. And I know that sounds strange, okay. But it happens in lots of cases. Yeah,
that leads me to a question because, okay, I'm the personality here, but Diane is the neurolinguistic programming expert, and you're an expert. So how in the world, that doesn't make sense to me as a layperson, not an expert. That doesn't make sense to me. You want the illness, the disorder, the disease to go away so that you feel good and, you know, mobile and all these other things. Why would you bring it back?
Well, I don't think you do consciously. It's the subconscious. The subconscious rules us most of the time anyway, not the mm-hmm. conscious. So subconsciously, they're not comfortable when it goes away. So they just pull it back in again. Yeah, because they haven't, on a subconscious level, they haven't fully dealt with it. So, yeah, it comes back in. And, I mean, you know people, they've been fine, and then suddenly they're back, they've got it again, and you think, Why do they have it again? I thought they dealt with it. That's why. It's because subconsciously it's like, oh no, something's missing. Oh. So they just pull it back in again. And I'm sure you've found that too.
Yes. What I do with my clients, first of all, is once they say that's what they want, they want this cured or that particular dream, whatever it is, I ask them, what would happen if you don't get this?
Mm.
Or what would happen negatively towards you, possibly, by getting this dream happiness? Who else will it might affect? Where else will it affect mm-hmm. in your life?
Right.
So sometimes maybe a person with really feeling more accepted and loved by someone might use the whatever it is that they're doing that's a behavior that they want to get rid of. They'll just keep doing it because mm-hmm. they're getting a positive, they have a positive mm-hmm. intention for something that's negative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a random thing. Do you mm-hmm. find that's
yeah.
true? That it's
yeah, it's a lot of like for sometimes with asthma, and in some cases it is true, if a child can do it for attention, and I think in some instances it's mm-hmm. probably true that, you know, the other kids are getting the attention, but when I've got the asthma attack, well then the whole focus is on me. So that you take the asthma away, oh, now I'm just one of the kids. So they go back to having it, literally having it again, so they can have, because it gives them what they're missing. They can't get it normally, so they use the illness as a way to get it.
So the self-awareness is
yeah.
really important.
Yes.
If you really want to get rid of that, right?
That's right.
So you can program that out of you, can't you?
Yes, yeah, you can. Yeah,
okay.
You can, because you've got to look at why you're doing it, whatever the illness is, what is it giving you that you're not getting normally? And once you figure that out, then you've got to go out and try and get that without the illness, because you can.
You have been listening to The Balanced Living Show, hosted by Diane Hume and Michael Rubin Cloggs. The special guest was Marvin Jones. If you like what you hear on The Community Living Show, please email us. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Community Living Radio Show, and on Twitter, @CLivingRadio. We are on 3 different stations in Vancouver and in Nanaimo, 2 in Vancouver, 1 in Nanaimo. One of them is in UBC, CITR 101.9 FM, and streaming online at CITR.ca. We broadcast on Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. On Sundays, Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We broadcast there from 10 to 11 a.m. on Sundays. And we're also on Nanaimo and the Sunshine Coast on CHLY 101.7 FM. Or their website is chly.ca. Please make sure that they check their local listings for times and schedules. We're also on the National Campus Radio Association Program Radio Exchange. Go to previous.ncra.ca. Again, that is it for the Community Living Show. On behalf of myself, Michael Rubin, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next week. Take care, everybody.
I am on a drug called Charlie Sheen. It's not available. If you try it once, you will die. Your face will melt off. You control the meat over your floating body. Over your floating body.
You love to party.
What's not to love? The run I was on made Jagger and Richard look like droopy-eyed arm was killed.